We're going to talk about that. We find ourselves in these parshios. We finished last week Parshas Miketz. We're now approaching Parshas Vayigash. But it's really one storyline. The Torah, really not characteristic of the Torah, the way we ended off the end of last week's Parsha, in the middle of a cliffhanger, in the middle of an episode. What's happening with Yosef and his brothers? He didn't reveal himself. They look like they're in trouble. We're really stuck in the middle of a story. So I think there's a tremendous link between Parshas Miketz and Parshas Vayigash. And I think it's very relevant to the Zman that we're in, as we will develop during the Shir. The Pasuk in this past week's Parsha, in the midst of the story with Yosef and his brothers, when the brothers come down, and Yosef tells his advisor, his assistant, to set up for them a suda, a meal, that they can feast with him. The pasuk says, "V'tavoach tevach v'hochein," and you should slaughter for them, arrange for them a suda with meat, permissible meat. And the Gemara in source number one tells us, "V'amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, my dechsev v'tavoach tevach v'hochein." The Gemara in Chun tells us, "Pralehen beis hashchita," that you should rip out and arrange for them the area on the neck that's revealed to them, the area in the neck, the area that it was slaughtered properly, so you'll see that it's kosher and that it was shechted. V'hachein, the Gemara says, tol gidonesha b'fenehem, you should wave the sciatic nerve that we spent a long time discussing weeks ago, and again in the Ashkama Minyan, that you should present in front of them the sciatic nerve. And the Gemara says, this obviously is going according to the Manda Amar, Gid Hanoshe Nesar Levdei Noach. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kuf Amabez presents a debate amongst the Tanaim whether or not the Gid Hanoshe, the sciatic nerve which is prohibited to eat, those people we spoke about, the Boy Scouts, the Boy Scout dinner weeks ago, that at the same time as the OU, or as a Jewish function in a hotel, they wanted to arrange a dinner for both functions at one time, and they wanted to have filet mignon, and the Boy Scouts were willing to have a kosher meal, but the one thing they wouldn't give in on was to take out the sciatic nerve, the Gid Hanoshe, from the filet mignon. So we are not permitted to eat the Gid Hanoshe. And if this was taking place in Parshas Miketz, obviously, this, the Gemara says, is going according to the Manda Amar, that already from the story of Yaakov, the quarrel between Yaakov and the Malach, that the Malach hit Yaakov in the thigh, and the Torah says, Al kein lo yochlu es Gid Hanoshe in Parshas Vayishlach. So we're going according to that Manda Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds already historically then, it was already prohibited to eat the sciatic nerve from then. What's fascinating, and we'll get back to, is in this parsha, as I said, there's storyline between Vayigash and Miketz, one long story. But the Megala Amukos, one of our great scholars in the Sodos, says there's a remez to the Nes, to the Chag of Chanukah, which is always read. Parshas Miketz is always read on Chanukah. That if you take Tavoach Tevach, the last letter of the Tavoach Tevach, the Ches, and the word V'hochein, it's Osios Chanukah. V'hochein and Ches. We have to understand why the Torah hints to Chanukah at this time, and how does that relate to us in a post-Chanukah situation. What's fascinating parenthetically in the next source, in source number two, Tosos says, I'm not really sure why the Gemara concludes that this necessarily is going according to the opinion that Gid Hanoshe was prohibited. Maybe these guys were the Shvatim. We know they were very holy people. They were spiritual individuals. So they volunteered whatever was ultimately going to become prohibited. They volunteered and they prohibited it for themselves, and they were makbid when they came to Yosef's house. Who says that technically, historically, it already was prohibited? Maybe the Shvatim were makbid not to have Gid Anoshe because they were religious. They were Eina Mitzuviyosa, they were Lefnim Mishur Sadin, they were volunteering this prohibition. Tosel says in source number of Tuvin, Timer Dimel Loy Neser Vafilu Hachi Hayu Mekayimin. Maybe it wasn't prohibited yet. It's even according to the Shita of the Rabbanon that the reason Gid Anoshe is prohibited is from Matan Torah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the whole Torah. And why were the brothers makbid? Tosel says it's just like Shechita. No one has any source for Shechita to be prohibited already from prior to Matan Torah. And you see the Gemara says we have to deal with Shechita also. Pralehem Beis HaShechita, show them that the Simonim were taken care of, that it was Shechted properly. So Tosos asked, maybe they volunteered. Yesh Lomar, Tosos says, Midekamer V'Hachein, from the fact that he used the language V'Hachein, Mashma D'Belav Hachilo Mishteri. It's mashma from the psukim that there was no ifs, ands, or buts about this, that this was technically prohibited, and you had to fix this, and it had to be set up and kosher, the hachin, set up readily available for them, the way it says in the books. That's what Tosel says. So the pasuk seems to be already alluding to the fact that this was technically prohibited. That's what Tosel argues. You look at source number 5, we're not going to go through it because we have a lot to cover. But source number 5 has a fascinating comment of the Gur Aryeh. This Gur Aryeh is a fascinating Gur Aryeh that hopefully we'll have time to delve into, which deals with many interesting topics. But the Gur Aryeh actually in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Vayigash, is discussing a pasuk that Shimon married Dina. And this is very problematic because they were relatives. And why were they allowed to marry each other? And without discussing and delving into this topic, so the Gur Aryeh suggests at the end, you go jump, Shimon married his sister Dina, Rashi tells us in this week's Parsha. And that was problematic, because that's prohibited. And it probably is even prohibited for the Bnei Noach, for the Gentiles as well. So the Gur Aryeh tells us, in source number 5, that there's a difference between a mitzvah lo saseh, a negative commandment, and a positive commandment. Kasher tovin v'teida ki elu amesugalum le'elu mitzvahs befrat, l'chein yesh lomar ki lo kimu mi she'enu mesugal l'chol ha'mitzvahs, es kol ha'mitzvahs, v'afilu nate ha'omer me'achah she'kol ha'mitzvahs he'en mitzvahs tzadikim yisharim v'tovim, lama in royoy u'mechuyiv she'yaso ha'kol, Shaharei, this is the line. Mi she'enu mechuyev b'davar kimo asuma aliba d'Rabbi Yehuda v'anoshim b'mitzvah she'em p'turim mitzvah hu da'avdi makablim schar. Zeu dafka, says the Maharal, b'mitzvah seseh d'yesh al zeh schar. Aval mitzvah lo saseh she'em kibol schar al mitzvah lo saseh u'ma'acher shalon itztavu lama yikaimu. The Maharal says a fascinating insight. When you talk about a person volunteering in the area of halacha, a person doing so even though he's not commanded, a woman who volunteers a mitzvah that she technically is exempt from because it's a time-bound mitzvah, a blind person who is technically who's technically not obligated according to some opinions in certain mitzvos. So when they volunteer, that makes sense in a positive mitzvah. You're giving something to the Rabbono Shalom. There's something positive, there's something here that even someone who's not technically obligated, but at the end of the day, he did something. He gave something to the Rabbono Shalom. He gave a nachas ruach. He did something positive. So there's a concept of volunteering. However, when it comes to a negative commandment, says the Maharal, what is a negative commandment? A negative commandment is, don't do this. So who do we say negative commandments apply to? Someone who I prohibited. Someone who technically is obligated in that law. If you're not obligated in that law, so then there's no issue and there's no idea and concept to voluntarily not do that. The whole concept of not doing it is if the policeman told you, don't do it. If the policeman never told you, don't do it, so you can sit in your house and not do it and think, you're a Mekayim mitzvah, you did something for the Rabbono Shel Olam? No. You sat and you handcuffed yourself, but no one told you to handcuff yourself. So when it comes to a negative commandment, there is no concept of Einu Mitzuv Yoseh, of doing it voluntarily. When it comes to a mitzvah essay, when it comes to a glorified, positive mitzvah, so then even technically you're not obligated, and the Rebbe Shalom didn't tell you to do it, but wow, what a person. He goes out of its way, and he does that mitzvah. That is something that is respected, and that is something that the Torah recognizes. So says the Maharal, with this rationale, if that's the case, one could apply this to Tosa's question. You see, I just wanted to point out, parenthetically, that Tosa's does not agree with this analysis of the Maharal. Because if Tosfos is saying that maybe they volunteered, and even according to the Shita of the Rabbanon, we can understand why Yosef wanted to take out the Get Anoshe, because even if they technically are only obligated then, but maybe they volunteered in the Get Anoshe, in the sciatic nerve is a negative commandment. The sciatic nerve is a prohibition. How can you have the concept of acting lefnim mishuras hadin and volunteering when it comes to a negative commandment? So you see that Tosfos is of the opinion against the Maharal, that one can volunteer when it comes to negative commandments, just like when it comes to positive commandments. This has tremendous ramifications lahalacha. We're not going to get into this right now because I'd like to discuss more of the topic, but this relates to the issue of chinuch when it comes to mitzvahs lo sase. Am I obligated when I have the chiyuv to educate my child who is not a bar mitzvah? Am I obligated to teach him in the negative commandments as well? Well, he's not obligated in anything. So maybe one can make the argument that when it comes to positive commandments, I have an obligation to educate him that he should do the positive commandments in a voluntary fashion. However, when it comes to negative commandments, maybe I don't have that obligation to educate him technically. And this is a debate in the Tosfos Yeshanim and Yuma and Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph, discussing why there is a specific prohibition to give non-kosher or to give something prohibited to your son. Why am I not allowed to feed something non-kosher to my baby or to my son that's not a bar chiyuv? So the Torah says, because the pasuk says, lo sachilum, you can't feed them anything that's prohibited. So Tosfos Yeshanim and the Rishonim ask the question, what do you need to come on to a pasuk of lo sachilum, a new pasuk? Just say, of course I can't feed him prohibitions. I have to be mechanech my child. Just like I have to teach him about Kriya Shema, I have to teach him how to shake a lulav, I have to educate my son who's not a bar mitzvah, I also have to educate him in chinuch when it comes to negative commandments. However, one answer in the Rishonim is, no. There is no concept of chinuch when it comes to negative commandments. Why should that be? How could you tell me that? There's no concept of chinuch, and that's why I need another pasuk to tell me that I, as the father, can't feed him chazer, I can't feed him milk and meat. Because otherwise, from the concept of chinuch, I wouldn't be limited. Because I have no concept of chinuch when it comes to negative commandments. Possibly, these days in the Rishonim and chinuch are discussing this issue of the Maharal. Is there a concept of voluntary mitzvahs, of lefnim mishuras hadin, of mi she'eino mitzuv v'yoseh, someone who is not commanded, volunteering to a negative commandment, to a lo saseh? Possibly this idea, this rishon in the Tosfos Yeshanim, is in agreement with this analysis of the Maharal. That the avos, they could marry who they wanted. These were lo saseis. They were just volunteering. So that is not necessarily an issue, and that's what I'm pointing out that Tosfos seems to debate. But what I'd like to discuss... Yeah?
Why If there's a negative commandment not to eat from, but is there a positive commandment to remove it? You know, is there a positive aspect?
The Gidanasha, you mean?
Gidanasha, right. I mean, you're not supposed to eat it, but there's also a positive portion of you're supposed to remove it.
I mean, technically, if there's not going to be anything prohibited, and you're going to totally stay away from it, I think the Torah is only saying you can't eat it.
So many times you see there's a positive that seems to be there's always a mirror.
Right. You know. There are times that the Torah says, but the Torah says that there's a lav hanita kle esi, or let's say when it comes to gezel, there's a lav hanita kle esi. So let's say I steal, and then the Torah says, and you should give back that stolen property. So there are certain times that the Torah links together with the prohibition a mitzvah esi. But from Gidanashe, it doesn't seem that the Torah presented a positive commandment when it came to the sciatic nerve. The problem is as follows. If we delve into this Gemara, so as we said before, the simple reading of the Gemara, and as Rashi says on source number 6, commenting on the Machlokas in the Tanoim of whether or not the sciatic nerve was prohibited then or now, Pasuk Zeshi, Zero Love, the last source number 6, this Pasuk that was warned to us at Sinai Nemer, Vad Sinai Lo Huzuru, says Rashi, according to the Shita of the Chachamim, the only time that we were prohibited in the sciatic nerve was from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Rachash Nemer, Besinai Vekach, Besider Moshe, Esatera, Kosova, Mikra, Azal, Maise, Alkin Huzur Bnei Yisro. Yes, it's written and placed in Parshas Vayishlach, but that's not why we're obligated. However, if you look in source number 3, fascinating Rambam, I'm not going to read it inside, but the Rambam tells you something that you really should read after this year. And it's really a fundamental concept as we exit the Parshios of Bereishis, carrying into Matan Torah eventually. This is a real essential Rambam to remember. The Rambam tells us, no matter how many stories you've read in Sefer Bereishis, nothing that we do is because of the commandment to the avos. Nothing that was commanded to Avram, says the Rambam. Nothing that was commanded to Yitzchak. Nothing that was commanded to Yaakov. Any of them. The reason we keep every single one of the 613 mitzvahs is because it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. And everyone should realize that. And that is why, because the Rambam says, we paskin, like the opinion of the Rabbanon against Rabbi Yehuda, in the Mishnah in Chulin and Daf Kuf Amid Beis, that they debate whether or not Gid Hanoshe is prohibited from before Matan Torah in Parshas Vayishlach, from the story with the Malach, or afterwards from Matan Torah. It says the Rambam, everyone is of the agreement historically what happened. Everyone is of the agreement that Yaakov and the Shvatim and the Avos kept Gid Hanoshe after the Malach whacked him in the thigh. The question between the Rabbanan and the Rabbi Yehuda is a halachic question. Why are we today obligated in the halacha of the sciatic nerve in this prohibition? Is it because of the story from before Matan Torah? Is that the tzivoy? Is that the pasuk? That's the commandment? That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? Or no, says the Rambam. We paskin like the Rabbanon, and therefore have a fundamental principle that commandments can only be from after Maimid Har Sinai, from after Moshe Rabbeinu accepting the Torah on Mount Sinai. And that's what we're saying. So the Rambam's telling us something totally different than Rashi's analysis on the Gemara. There is no debate historically. If you were making a shidduch with Yaakov Avinu, and you would ask him, do you eat gefilte fish? Do you put plastic on your tablecloth? Are you makbid on Gid Hanoshe? The answer would be, according to all of the opinions of the Tanaim, absolutely. I keep Gid Hanoshe. Look at the story in Parshas Vayishlach. Says the Rambam, the only debate between the Tanoim is why we keep Gid Hanoshe. What is the mechayev? What is the commandment? Is that from there, Parshas Vayishlach, or is it from after Matan Torah? But if this is case, this is a tremendous problem. Because we don't know how to read the pasuk that we are in the midst of right now. And how do we read this Gemara? Let's look back at source number one. Va'amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, may dechsiv etavoch tevach va'achein, pralem beis hashchita. Tol get anoshe b'fneim. Show them the get anoshe. Says the Gemara, the last phrase. Who's this going according to? Kemanda Omar, gid hanoshe, neser levnei noach. Obviously, says the Gemara, this is going according to the opinion that gid hanoshe, the sciatic nerve, was already prohibited at the story in this parsha of the brothers at Yosef. However, if you're holding like the opinion of the Rabbanon that the commandment was only later on, so how, you can't read the pasuk to talk about the sciatic nerve. The sciatic nerve wasn't a halacha yet. And now I ask you, that's the way Rashi presented the Machlokas Tanaim. That the two manda amrim of Gidanosha, when it's prohibited, was whether or not there was an existence of a prohibition. According to the Rabbanan, Gidanosha was not prohibited prior to Matan Torah. So therefore, we can read the Gemara, that the Gemara is only going, according to the manda amr, that Gidanosha was already prohibited from Parshas Vayishlach. However, according to the opinion of Rabbanan, that it was usher from Matan Torah, Rashi says, he can't read the story of Yosef and the brothers like that. But the Rambam, who tells us a principle, that why are we obligated in mitzvahs? Is it from Matan Torah or is it even from prior? So the Rambam says, we are obligated only from Matan Torah. And that's why everything was repeated. But the Rambam says, no one is in disagreement. Historically, what happened in the story with Yaakov and the Malach? No one is in disagreement between what happened with the ancestors, our ancestors and the kids of Yaakov, what they had to be makbid on. Of course they kept the halacha of Gidanosha, says the Rambam. If that's the case, this Gemara is very problematic. Why is the Gemara limited, telling us that it's only going according to Rabbi Yehuda, that Gidanosha is already usher, and the Gemara says that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is a nafkamina la'alacha, that he holds that the sciatic nerve is prohibited even in non-kosher animals. Because at that point in time, there was no distinction between kosher and non-kosher animals. Whereas according to Rabbanon, the obligation only comes later, so then it only applies to kosher animals, which you technically can eat. But according to the Rambam, everyone holds that it's prohibited to eat the sciatic nerve at that point in time. So why is the Gemara limiting it to the opinion that Gidanosha existed from Kol D'Matan Torah? Everyone holds like that. It's just a machlokas when we are obligated. How does this one read this Gemara? So the Chasam Sofer suggests, Alpi, the Ramban, that the Ramban says that the reason why the Avos were allowed to marry sisters like Yaakov Avinu did is because the mitzvahs really exist in their entirety in Eretz Yisrael. And then when they were outside of Eretz Yisrael, so they were able to be a little lax when it comes to mitzvahs. And this is an idea that the Ramban follows through throughout the Torah about Iker Kiyama mitzvahs existing in Eretz Yisrael. And the Chasam Sofer suggests that possibly one can understand this story similar to the Ramban, that the Avos, the Shvatim, when they came to Yosef, they were in Mitzrayim. They were outside of Eretz Yisrael. So maybe they didn't have to be makbid in these halachos when it came to the Gidanosha, according to those opinions. It could be, maybe that's the opinion of the Rambam. We don't have any proof that that's the opinion of the Rambam. Others want to suggest, Rav Dan Plotsky in the Klei Chemda, he suggests, he was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, that technically there shouldn't have been a problem with the brothers eating from this meat. They didn't know that the sciatic nerve was inside. And if you're totally unaware that you're doing something wrong, so that's a concept in the Torah called misasik. If I am not aware that I'm doing something, if I walk on Shabbos and I take a bite of an apple, and I don't even know that that apple is connected to the ground, and I'm intending just to take a bite, not to pull it out of the tree, or pull it out of the ground, whatever, or what, if it's a vegetable, So then that's what's called misasik. That's even better than shogeg. You're not accidental, you forgot it's Shabbos. There at least you're aware of what you're doing. You have to bring a karbon because you technically are aware about what you're doing. When I'm misasik, I don't even know that the isser, the prohibition exists, so I don't even have to bring a karbon. So says the Don Platsky, they came, they sat down, they didn't know the sciatic nerve was in there. So they were misasik. Why did Yosef have to show them? Says Rav Don Platsky, that's exactly the debate in the Gemara. If they were keeping this based on being real Jews, and when Jews are obligated in mitzvahs, which is later on in Matan Torah, so then you're right. Then the pasuk that tells us misasik is pater. Misasik, someone who's not aware about what he's doing, that is a pasuk that is specifically said to Jews. So then we can understand. However, the Gemara is saying this is going according to the Man D'Amar, that it was already prohibited prior. It was already prohibited at the time of the Bnei Noach, according to Rabbi Yehuda, before the concept of being a full-fledged Jew applied. And that's why this exemption of Misasik, which was only said to Jews, was not instituted, and that's why Yosef had to show it to them, and that's what the Gemara means, that it's going specifically according to the Man D'Amar and the opinion that Gid Anasha was Aser and prohibited prior to the Nesinas HaTorah, because it applied to our status at that time, which was Bnei Noach. We weren't full-fledged Jews. And that's why they didn't have an exemption called Misasik, like non-Jews don't have, according to the analysis of the Klei Chemda. And that's the way he wants to explain the Gemara. It's also an interesting explanation, a nice idea, but very questionable. A, based on the shiurim we gave a few weeks ago, that this Gid Anasha, it's really a regular Macholos Asuras, and when it comes to something that's edible, and something that you actually get Hanah from, so then the exemption of Misasek shouldn't apply because you're actually getting a geshmak out of it. You're being nenes. So then, even if I'm not aware when I'm putting it in my mouth, once I feel how good it tastes, so then maybe, you know, I should not be exempt anymore, and the Ptur of Misasek shouldn't apply. So that's a question. And also the suggestion that this is the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, whether or not the Avos were Kodem Matan Torah Jewish or not Jewish, doesn't seem to be mashma in the Gemara that that's what they're debating, and it's a big suggestion. It's food for thought. I'd like to present an idea to you from the Brisker Rav, but it really, I think it answers this question, but it's a fascinating analysis, and it really gives us insight to the concept of Torah Shebal Peh. But this idea, and the way we're going to resolve this, stems from a story. And it's a fascinating story. But there are two versions of the story that I've heard. There was a period of time, many people are not aware of this, that a Nodib Yehuda, or Yecheskel Landau, who was a big Litvisher Rav, was close and learnt with the Baal Shem Tov, one of the masters of Hasidus. A woman came in to the Nodib Yehuda's house, into his office, to discuss privately an issue. And the Baal Shem Tov was waiting outside in the waiting room. And he saw the woman walk by with the chicken in her hand. And she ran in to ask the Nodib Yehuda what the din is. And as she walked by, the Baal Shem Tov immediately said, "It's kosher." And the Nodib Yehuda sat down with the woman, discussed. After 15 minutes, she left. And the Baal Shem Tov, the Talmidim came out to the Baal Shem Tov, they said, "I understand. Nodib Yehuda sat there with 15 minutes with the woman. What's 2 seconds she walked by, you didn't even see the woman's face? You know that it's kosher?" Says the Baal Shem Tov, "Yeah, I felt the Ruach HaKodesh on top of the chicken, and I knew that the answer was that it was kosher." And the Nodib Yehuda responded that this is incorrect. This is against all of what we believe in, because there is a concept in the Torah called Lo Bashamayim. We don't paskin halacha, says the Nodeb Yehuda, based on Ruach HaKodesh, divine inclination. We base our decisions based on halacha, based on Shulchan Aruch. And that's what the Nodeb Yehuda says. There is another version of the story that the Nodeb Yehuda's daughter was with the Baal Shem Tov, and while she was with the Baal Shem Tov and talking to him, he tore Kriya. And she asked him, why did you just tear Kriya? And he said, I just felt that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh was Nifter. And she came back to her father, the Nodeb Yehuda. She said, no, I was with the Baal Shem Tov. Unbelievable. He tore Kriya. You know, as we were talking, because he felt that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh was Nifter. And the Nodeb Yehuda responds, and the Baal Shem Tov was over Baal Tashkas. Because we don't paskin based on Ruach HaKodesh and based on divine inclination, and therefore he wasted his shirt. Part of the problem that some of the Achronim and the Svarim and the Talmidim asked the Baal Shem Tov is that didn't the Avos have Ruach HaKodesh? Why did Yosef have to show them and present to them that I took out the Gidanoshe? Didn't they know this through their special powers that we know the Avos had? So you see a proof against the Baal Shem Tov, like the Nodeb Yehuda, from the Gemara that we just started off with. And the Brisker Rav said as follows, in defense to the Baal Shem Tov. And I think that this idea of the Brisker Rav is a tremendous idea for us and will answer the question that we presented on the Rambam. You see, there's a difference between a halacha that's registered and regimented already in the laws of the Torah and something that's not so. So therefore, according to the Manda Omer, that Gid Hanoshe was already prohibited and was already a registered halacha at that time in the Torah, and it was already part of the 613 at that time, so then you're right. Then the rules and regulations of what's involved with the laws of the Torah have to apply. And that means when I approach such a halacha, I have to approach it as halacha. I can't rely on divine inclination. I can't rely on Ruach HaKodesh. I need to rely on what the Torah gives me. And that is the halacha of Lo Bashamayim. And therefore, it's specifically according to that opinion that I was not able to rely on the Avos' divine inclination. They needed to be shown the sciatic nerve because the halacha of Lo Bashamayim already applied. Because this was a bona fide halacha already registered in the upcoming 613 mitzvahs. It was registered already now in Parshas Vayishlach. However, if the tzivui, and as we say in the yeshivas, the cheftza shel Torah, is only coming soon, is upcoming attractions, is only after Maimed Har Sinai, and right now, technically, it's not one of the laws regimented, listed in the 613, so then the rules of Lo Bashamayim don't apply. And one can rely on the idea of divine inclination. So you know how the Rambam, who held that both Rabbanon and Rabbi Yehuda, all opinions, held that yes, they practiced the prohibition of the sciatic nerve, how is he going to read this Gemara that says it's only going according to one opinion? That it was already prohibited from that time? The answer is exactly what we're saying. The question is, when does it turn into Torah? Does it turn into Torah? Does it get registered from Parshas Vayishlach prior to the story with Yosef? And therefore they can't rely on their divine inclination, and they have to be shown the Gid Hanoshe like Yosef did to them? Or no? says the Briskerov. It was something that they practiced, even according to the Rabbanon, even according to the analysis of the Rambam. However, lo b'shamayim hi, the rules and regulations of how to derive the laws of the Torah, how to approach the Torah, to rely on Kabbalah, to rely on mysticism, to rely on divine inclination. That not necessarily would be a restriction, and therefore the Gemara that said they had to wave and show the sciatic nerve is limited and is specific to that opinion that held it already was Torah. And that's the way the Rambam will understand this Gemara. The same way the Briskerov, anyone who tells you that the Hasidim and the Briskers, they don't get along, the Briskerov saved the Baal Shem Tov with this Vart. And that's what he said. Because Lo Bashamayim Hi is not something that we don't accept. And this is what I bring in source number 4. Tosfos in Yevamos discusses different contradictions throughout Shas in the Gemara in Bamatzia with the story of whether the Tanur Shalachnai, a certain oven, was it Tameh, was it Tahor. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar called out to a Baskol to prove that he was right. And the Gemara says, Ein Mashkich in the Baskol. We ignore it. Yet there are other times, like in Gemara and Yevamos, deciding between whether or not Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel was right. Tosfos says, then we do follow a Baskol. So how does one resolve this contradiction? Do we follow divine inclination, or do we not follow divine inclination? So Tosfos says, well, it depends. If the divine inclination is up against a rove, is up against the majority, so then we ignore it. If it's going with the majority, it's supporting the majority, so that's something that we can listen to. So you see, Tosfos is already willing to accept that Lo Bashamayim Hi is not an ironclad rule that you can't accept in halacha divine inclination. There are certain scenarios, depending on the situation, as Tosfos, you could see the examples that Tosfos develops, that divine inclination and the words of God at Kol is accepted. However, it depends. The Rambam, and I'm not going to go into it, the Rambam seems to imply, as Rabbi Chanan Wasserman is of the opinion, that we never accept spiritual voices, baskols, nevius when it comes to halachic issues. And lo bashamayim hi, the halacha, that anything that's based on spirituality, a voice from Shemayim, is not accepted whatsoever. Not in agreement to the ideas of Tosfos. This is something that we find in Bereishis in different areas. The Meshech Chachma of Meir Simcha Midvinsk writes that in the story with Avimelech and Avram Avinu, the Torah says, return Sarah to Avram Avinu, ki Navi hu. Because he's a Navi. He's a prophet. The Meshech Chachma writes that, you know what that means? Don't think that he's not going to live with his wife now because you have now taken her. Because he knows actually what happened. He is a prophet. And his nevuah will now permit him to live with his wife in the future. Obviously, the Meshech Chachma is of the opinion that nevuah, prophecy, similar to the idea of Tosfos, sometimes does play a role in halacha. Unlike the idea of the Rambam. There is a sefer that I brought over here, Sha'ilos Utshuvos Min HaShemayim. This is a fascinating sefer. It's from one of the Rishonim that he discusses many different issues that he has resolutions from different dreams and different ideas that he had through his sleeping or divine inclinations, whatever you call it. And in order to get it to sell, he has to deal with the issue of Lo Bashamayim Hi. Is this something that I can actually take into the Beis Medrash and deal with in a halachic setting? And he says a fascinating concept, similar to what we're developing in Tosfos, but he says, yes, it's true that there is a concept of Lo Bashamayim Hi, but that's only when it's contradicting the rules and regulations and the rule book of how to derive things through Torah Shebaal Peh. If the Torah says I could derive this through the Yud Gimel Midah Shatorah Nidreshes Vehem, through certain tools that Moshe was given at Har Sinai, And you tell me no, because I have a divine voice. I have a baskol. So then obviously, I will ignore that baskol. I will ignore that nevuah, because I have Torah Shebaal Peh. I have what Moshe Rabbeinu gave me. And then when there's a contradiction, so then lo bashamayim. I don't follow that voice. And therefore, says the Shulchan Hashamayim, I'm trying to resolve certain things that we're not sure about, that we're stuck. Eliyahu Hanavi, he will come, teku. The Gemara says, Tishbu Yitaretz, Kushyos V'Abayos. Eliyahu will come and tell us when we're not sure. What are we not sure about? We're not sure what the Metzius is. We're not sure who's right. Torah Shebaal Peh is not going to give us a resolution to this issue. That's where he writes. That the divine, the Bashamayim, plays a role. And I think this idea is mimicked and found already in the Mishnah Berurah. We find the different halachos in Siman Chaf Hei, whether or not one should put on his tefillin when he's sitting, whether or not a person who's coming to shul late, should he skip Psukah Dezimra and jump to Chazar Sasha, jump to Shmona Esrei to catch Tefillah B'Tzibur, what should he do? The Shulchan Aruch says you should. The Zohar says if a person skips Psukah Dezimra, he's like flipping up the pipelines to Tefillos, Mahapech B'Tzinoros, how could he do such a thing? And the Achronim say, what do we do? We're stuck. On the one hand, we have Kabbalah. On the other hand, we have Shulchan Aruch. We have Halacha. What do we do? And they say, the Maharshal, the Chacham Tzvi, they say a similar idea. They say, if we have something that's set in Halacha, in Shulchan Aruch, given through our rules of Torah Shebaal Peh, so then, yes, we disregard the Kabbalah. If there's a contradiction in Kabbalah to the Halacha, that's something that we don't follow. However, if the halacha doesn't have an opinion on the matter, or we're stuck, and halacha can't resolve this issue, so then that's a certain time that Kabbalah, and similar to what we're saying in the concept of lo bashamayim hi, will play a role, and that's something that we do take seriously, as the Brisker Rav was presenting in Shitas HaRambam, and therefore mysticism, Kabbalah, nevuah, is an idea according to these opinions, and according to what we're showing, lahalacha, even down to the Mishnah Berura, what we do in every day of our lives. We started off the shir that this is a pasuk, the tavoach tevach v'achein, both in the storyline of the two parshiyos that we're in now, but also, as the Magala Amukah said, relevant to the time of Chanukah, Ches of Tevach and V'Hachin, Osios of Chanukah. But you're probably thinking, why am I mentioning Chanukah? I'm aware that we're 2 days after Chanukah. However, I think the idea that we mentioned is very relevant to the ideas of Chanukah and the point period that we're holding in right now, the aftermath. You see, we say in Al Anisim, "V'zeidim biyad oskei sarasecha," and there were zeidim. It's not sure what it's referring to. The enemies were referred to as zeidim biyad oskei sarasecha. The Prima Gadim in Shulchan Aruch in Chos Chanukah writes oskei sarasecha, similar to the bracha that we make every morning, lasok b'direi sora. There's a certain aspect of osek haTorah that the Zaydim were against. And the Yaros Dvash, Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz writes, you see, even prior to the Nes of Chanukah, for 7-8 generations, the Yevanim were trying to eradicate the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh. The concept of what we're talking about. Lo bashamayim hi. There are tools. There are rules of regulation that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. And that's what they couldn't take. They couldn't take the Asek Batorah, Lasok Batorah, people who derive halachos and are involved day to day. That's what they couldn't stand. And that's the Zaydim. Rav Yonatan Eibeshitz writes, the Zaydim refer to not only the Yevanim, but refer to the people that the Greeks empowered, which was the Tzdukim, the people in Yiddishkeit that were against Torah Shebaal Peh. The Zaydim, they were against the Oskei BaTorah. They were empowered. And that's who we had to fight against as well during these generations. And ultimately, the nace of the menorah came about. The Netziv writes in Parshas Tetzaveh a fascinating idea. Parshas Tetzaveh is filled with Aaron HaKohen, with all the begodim, the kahuna. But yet, there's one pasuk, there's one parsha there that's referring to the menorah that seems out of place. It should be with the rest of the kelim. V'yikhu elecha shemen zayis. The Medrash writes, Moshe Rabbeinu, you should know and you should be appeased that they will take to you the shemen of the Ner Chanukah, of the menorah, and you should see it and you should verify if it's good or if it's not. And with this, you'll be appeased. And that's the menorah is in Parshas Tetzaveh. What is this telling us? The Netziv says there were two avenues of Torah. There was the Aaron HaKohen avenue, and there was the Moshe Rabbeinu avenue. The Aaron HaKohen avenue, which is the Kohen with the Urim V'Tumim, who will receive the Torah with very little involvement, with divine inclination. And that was the opinion, that was the approach of the Kohanim, of the priests. And that was one way to derive the Torah. But then there was the Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pilpulei Shel Torah, as the Netziv writes. The Esek BaTorah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, a Torah which works on us delving and deriving and forgetting and working and using the tools at Maimonides Sinai and continuing the process again and again for generations to come. That was the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu was given, and that was the new approach of Torah, these two avenues. And the Netziv writes, this is what the menorah represented. The idea of Moshe Rabbeinu with his Pilpul Shel Torah, which is why the nace of Chanukah, says the Netziv, brought out the concept of the Sheven Neros, seven Chachmas of Torah, Pilpul Shel Torah, but also brought about our connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. As we know, the Ner Ma'aravi, the shemen of the Ner of the menorah, never burnt out. It showed that the Shekhinah rested upon us. Because this concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, of continuing to exist and to delve and to derive and to continue the process further and further, is something which binds us to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And with this I close. This is what bothered the Yevanim. They weren't bothered by the Torah Shebichsav, by the Aron. They were specifically bothered with the menorah. The menorah which deals with a Torah that has a continuous connection to God, that shows not only the fact that we can develop the Torah, but shows that through our developing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests with us. And the Ner Ma'aravi never blows out. And he's with us through the Torah. And as the Beis Halevi writes, the cloth of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the parchment, is not a physical parchment as you wrote, as you said, but rather, it's al-levavecha. We are the parchment of the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebaal Peh is what allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu to stay with us. And that's why the Yevanim were anti the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's what tells us that we have a chilek with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're interconnected. And that's what the nace of Chanukah was all about. Explains the Netziv after Chanukah. You know what the nace was? There was unbelievable future and yeshivas were opened everywhere. The havayos of Abaye Derava, the questions and answers of the Gemara were now dealt with everywhere because all the apikorsim, they were finished with. We all were involved with Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's what the menorah represents. The Torah Shebaal Peh that continued afterwards. And that is the aftermath of the Nes of Chanukah. And that, I want to close with, is the idea and is the time that we are in right now. If you look in the Tur and in Shulchan Aruch, in Simin Tav Kuf Peh, you will see that there is a tainus that's brought on the 9th of Teves. Why? Because the Yevanim tried to translate the Torah on the 9th of Teves. And that is what Teves is all about. Teves, as the Medrash in Shir HaShirim writes, Miloshon HaTava, that Moshe Rabbeinu was very bothered when Klal Yisrael didn't want to hear Matan Torah from the Ribbono Shel Olam, they wanted to hear through Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was all upset. And the Ribbono Shel Olam answers, the Medrash says, Heitivu Asher Diberu. No, listen to them. And the Medrash explains, Heitivu asher diberu milashon hatavas haneros. From the clearing and the fixing and the cleaning of the menorah. What's the connection? That's what Tevis is all about. The fact that Torah Shebaal Peh existed after, in the aftermath of the Nes of Chanukah, and now we have the ability to stay connected with the Ribbono Shalom. You see, because the Ritziv says, if you would take the approach of Aaron, of Lo Bashamayim, of the inclination of the... So then, we would know all the Torah, we'd walk away, we'd go to work, and we'd never have to come to the Fairlawn Beis Medrash at night. Because we wouldn't forget anything, we'd finish our job and we'd be fine. So the Ribbono Shalom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right, they're not going to hear it from me. But you know what? There's something positive about that. Because they're going to forget. And they're going to have to re-clean. And they're going to have to fix those neiros. And they're going to have to chazer over that Gemara. And they're going to have to work and derive and delve and work through the tools of you, Moshe Rabbeinu, and not of Aaron HaKohen. And that's what Teves is. Teves milashon hatova. Sticking and cleaning and delving and working on the Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's what Teves is all about. And that's what we mimic. It's this idea of the Shira Shirim Rabbah. The idea of Torah Shebaal Peh. The idea of not going through the Mahalach of Aaron HaKohen. Going through the Mahalach of Moshe Rabbeinu. Through the tools of Torah Shebaal Peh. Through the delving. And ultimately fulfilling what Teves really means from the language of Hatavas HaNeros after the yeshivas of the menorah. Shkayach.